Hello and welcome back to our middle school podcast series. Thanks for joining us again. We're up to episode two of 2020, and I appreciate you tuning in. It's just me, Greg O'Neill, head of middle school, for the podcast this week. And it's Wednesday night at time of recording here, and we've just finished a fantastic Year 9 parent information evening on the back of Monday's Year 7 and 8 parent information evenings. And it was great to see the wonderful support from the parents by turning up on Monday and Wednesday evenings. And it was great to see you there. I know that a number of parents contacted us with the busyness of life, were just unable to make it on those particular nights. And what we said we'd do is we'd put together some of the information from those evenings and throw it into this podcast. So this podcast is a little bit of a repeat for those parents who were here on Monday or on Wednesday. So bear with us, you get the chance to hear it again, or for those who missed out, I hope you get the chance to enjoy this podcast now. I started by talking about an article that was published in the New York Times by David Brooks in January last year. And the title of the article was "Students Learn from People They Love." And the byline read, "Putting Relationship Quality at the Center of Education." And the theme of the article has implications for all of us, like both parents and teachers. The adolescent journey is a time of great change and development, but it's also a time of emotional peaks and troughs and can be a time of unpredictability. And centuries of schooling and parenting have told us this, we know. But more recently, neuroscientists have confirmed it, and now behavioural psychologists can explain it to us. And as middle school teachers, we've been paying attention to what the research says about teens and how they learn best. And as Brooks rightly highlights in his article, teaching is no longer a process of simply downloading knowledge into students' brains. Teachers are rather facilitators of learning, and true learning is a process of exploration and deepening of understanding. And learning is emotional. Now, it talks about our adolescents being emotional. Well, learning is emotional too, and it's got to be. We all learn best when we're emotionally invested. Now, some might ask, how is it possible to be emotionally invested in schoolwork? Kids probably would ask that. But the science of teaching is very much the art of creating emotional connections within the process of learning, irrespective of the content. And a desire for knowledge, or the search for truth, is innately Augustinian. So our middle school teachers are tasked with cultivating and fostering that love for learning. When boys are emotionally invested in something, they have a hunger for success. And as Brooks emphasizes in his article, when a quality relationship exists between teacher and students, the desire for learning peaks. As parents in 2020, you're invited and encouraged to be part of that relationship. We want you to walk with us on this adolescent journey, and we want to walk with you too. Now, if you haven't discovered it already, you soon will. The adolescent part of boys' development is different from what you've expected thus far. Over the course of my career, I've heard a heap of analogies used to describe the adolescent journey. But I'm always wary of using language that has a starting in deficit. Like things like, oh, it's such a roller coaster ride. Look, yes, the teenage years is going to have its challenges. And yes, the beautiful, kind, affectionate son that you've got will seemingly become less beautiful, less affectionate, and occasionally less kind. But it's important we see and acknowledge and understand the teenage years as significant moments of growth. They do an incredible amount of growing in this time. And these are the years when they establish really important foundations and building blocks for their future years. So not only do we need to invest in these teenage years, we've got to be excited about them. And we've got to show our young men that we're excited and we're invested in this journey as well. How do we do this here at Villa? Well, our middle school priorities are threefold. They're understanding who we teach, knowing what we teach, and making the learning visible, and understanding the how of teaching. So throughout the last few months, our middle school teachers have been busily preparing programs to ensure that two of those priorities, what we teach and how we teach, are achieved. Through the use of OneNote, we make the curriculum and learning intentions visible to our students. That's how we ensure that we know what we're teaching, we're specific about it, and all of that learning intentions are visible for you as a parent, but especially for the boys. As middle school teachers, we are all part of our college-owned Collaborative and Reflective Practices Program, or CRP. This is a space where teachers meet regularly to discuss the how of teaching. The effective strategies that we're using inside and outside the classroom. And we're opening up the walls of our classroom to watch each other teach and learn from each other and develop as the best practitioners that we want to be. That's how we address those two priorities. But I want to talk in this podcast mostly about the understanding who we teach, how it is that we understand your son. And this is a priority for us where you as parents can help us. And I'm hoping to leave you following this podcast with a few research-based takeaways that will assist you guys on the home front. Now, the first step in understanding our students is knowing, understanding, and celebrating them as individuals. It has to be. Our teachers over the course of the next few weeks will be starting to form those really important relationships and hearing your son's story and telling a little bit of their own story too. Our sevens and eights are ripping away to camp over the next 2 weeks. So all of those relationship building can begin to happen both between the boys and their peers, but also the teachers as well. We also need to be up to date with what the current research is saying on adolescent neuroscience. Now, neuroscience tells us that adolescents can't fully access the executive function part of the brain, among other things. It's the bit that helps them make good decisions. And I'll just share this quote with you. The prefrontal cortex is the portion of the brain right behind the forehead, which is one of the last areas of the brain to mature in males. This part of the brain is necessary for good judgment, controlling impulse, solving problems, setting goals, organization, planning, and other skills that are essential to adults. This is the part of the brain that really resets throughout the teenage years. And without being able to access that part of the brain, they rely on another part of the brain in order to do those things that I just mentioned. And that part of the brain also happens to be the emotional epicenter of the brain. Now, as I said before, the teenage years can see peaks and troughs of emotions and times of unpredictable behavior. In fact, the World Health Organization labeled this time as, quote, the window of vulnerability. And I really love that expression. It's coupled with a fantastic graph, which I shared on the Parent Nights. It basically graphs the time when the boys, in the development of the boys' emotional development, and it moving faster than the executive function development. And what it graphs is the maturing of the limbic system, and how which is the emotional epicenter of the brain, and how it develops so much faster than that prefrontal cortex. And the lines as they're graphed head further and further away from each other as they hit those sort of 14, 15 years. And then as the late teens and early 20s, the lines come back closer together again. And that time when the emotional, the limbic system is firing on all cylinders and the prefrontal cortex is lagging behind, that's the little window of vulnerability. So as parents and teachers of young people, we have some significant responsibilities when it comes to ensuring that our kids, the kids in our care, are successfully transitioning through this window of vulnerability. A parent's responsibility extends now for the teenage years well beyond feeding them, clothing them, and Ubering them. A teacher's responsibility extends well beyond just teaching them a paragraph structure or how to solve an equation. It's our collective responsibility in partnership to create environments where our young people can not just survive the teenage years, but flourish. And in an era where a young person's mental health is intrinsically related to their overall well-being and success, we have to be vigilant in monitoring the environments in which our young people exist. With the current levels of poor mental health in schools and society as a whole, as teachers and parents, we have to be arming ourselves and our young people with the skills to manage our well-being. As with illness, prevention is the best cure. It's better than a cure. And Villanova remains committed to teaching the social emotional competencies that our young people need. We also need to listen to our young people. And late last year, the college surveyed all students from years 5 to 11, as part of our longitudinal study into boys' social and emotional well-being. Each year, the longitudinal data affirms a lot of things that we see on the ground year in, year out. And I shared in the Parent Nights a little snapshot of the data that highlighted a few of those aspects. In particular, there's some really great affirmations around the way the boys felt belonging and connection to the school. That was a really strength area for Villa Boys, as was their connection on the home front. They were telling us that overwhelming majority of boys had parents that were prepared to make time for them and listen to them about problems or listen to them about what's happening with their schoolwork or at school. And they're really critical protective factors that young people need during this window of vulnerability. Connections with school, good relationships with parents. They're two really critical protective factors throughout the boys' adolescent years. So what is it that we can do? What research-based effective takeaways can I offer you through this podcast? And we're going to address a few of these in our podcast series throughout this year. Well, I left the parents on Monday and Wednesday with these four things. The first one is around limit setting and establishing clear expectations for the boys. I use the analogy of access and opportunity. And in this day and age, the boys, if they really want to access something, we have to understand that they can get it. And they might be accessing, if they have the will, be able to access things that we as adults wouldn't approve of. In an era where access and access points exist everywhere, one of the things that we need to be mindful of is what opportunities do they have to access that? And that's one of the factors that, as teachers and parents, is in our control. What opportunities are presenting for our young men where they're able to access something they shouldn't? And that's where really clear limit setting and supervision is important. And it's hard because a 14-year-old boy is striving and is going to be asking for independence and trust. But the risk factors for an unsupervised 14-year-old almost now exceed the risk factors of an unsupervised, you know, 8-year-old or 9-year-old. These boys need those limits and they need that level of supervision to protect them from some of those risk times. We'll talk more about that in future podcasts. Also talked about sleep and phones. Let's just quickly jump to phones. Last year, as I'm sure you're aware, a number of states, including Western Australia and Victoria, introduced school-wide bans on mobile phones. Now, in an era where digital natives, which are our boys, they're digital natives, and they thrive with technology, there were definitely some opposing views to school bans, phone bans in schools, sorry. And I think in order to understand the phone ban, I think we need to sit back and acknowledge what incredible things smartphones are. They are our personal access point to a smorgasbord of interconnected digital content. They are fantastic. And as adults, we might use our smartphones to a very limited capacity. I know I do. But for a teenager, the access and for a smartphone, they can access a whole lot more. Smartphones can answer any question the boys might have instantly. You grab it, ask the question, and you have the answer right at the click of your fingers. A smartphone can connect our young people to their peers anytime, anywhere, and not just via text, but via images and video, both live and pre-recorded. And of course, smartphones are a source of entertainment for our young people. They can consume movies and TV shows and gaming. So all those entertainment sources. And without limits, I guess, gambling and online shopping and pornography and things like that as well. So I guess what I'm saying is that the more amazing smartphones have become, the greater impact they're now having on student learning. And I'm not saying this because you don't know how great a smartphone is. I'm sharing this with parents because at Villa, we want to be bold in this space about phones, and we need the support of parents to do that. We know that a driver of a vehicle who is using a phone has their impact, has their performance impacted when they drive that vehicle. It creates deficits, like delayed reaction and distracts the attention from what they're doing. In the educational domain, using mobile phones while learning creates a similar deficit in distracting them from the attention that they should be giving to their learning. And the research that's coming now is saying that simply turning them on silent or leaving them in their pocket or placing them on the desk face down is almost as equally ineffective as just simply having them as part of the learning. They're saying the omnipresence and the strong appeal that's connecting the boys to something that could be deeply personal, such as a social network on that phone, is now significantly affecting their capacity to remain attentive. They're saying the mere presence of the phone has become a distraction. And the emerging research is suggesting that the potential detrimental effects of smartphones on a student's cognitive function may well now be having an effect on their long-term welfare. In middle school in 2020, phones that come to school can only be stored in one place, the student locker. This is something we've asked of the boys, and I've asked the teachers to be vigilant with students who have phones on their person. Phones will be confiscated, taken to the relevant year level coordinator, and then returned to the boys at the end of the day. Our aspiration, though, is that our year level coordinators will contact you as parents when these moments occur. We need to be educating on our boys, and we have to take them on a journey, and there is some cultural work or countercultural work to be done here. But I thank you in advance for supporting this initiative to ensure that the moments in the classroom the boys can give their full attention to. The third takeaway that we addressed on Monday and Wednesday nights were around sleep. And the three pillars of good teen health include regular exercise, which we know, good nutrition, which we know, and good sleep. And together they create a triangular relationship that protects against things like mental and physical ill health. And I don't think we talk enough about sleep. The literature saying that a 2018 study released said that 70% of teenagers are now experiencing sleep deprivation. And what's the impact of that? Well, learning and academic performance being impacted. They say, quote, cognitive shutdown, end quote, occurs when the tired brain is unable to access short-term memory, basically in one ear, out the other. So it's poor sleep is impacting academic performance. It's impacting emotional and mental health. It's impacting behaviours and decision-making processes, and it's impacting the physical body system as well. The science says that our boys need 9 hours sleep, particularly in that age from 12 to 18 years. It's like 8 hours minimum, but 9 hours is optimal. And I get that that's a really hard sell for teenagers. But a well-rested brain, which processes new classroom learning into short-term memory, then needs consolidated REM sleep on the subsequent night to file this learning into long-term memory banks. I mean, as you can predict, phones, again, are like the biggest kryptonite to a good night's sleep. But the 9 hours sleep is critically important, as is good sleep routines as well. Trying to get to bed at roughly the same time each night and waking up at the same time each night, and absolutely avoiding screen time in that last hour before we go to bed. They're the things that ensure the best night sleep possible. We're going to do a little bit of work on that with our boys throughout the year, in understanding the importance in sleep, and hoping that we might be able to get them setting some of their own sleep goals. So watch out for a little bit more about that in the coming months. And then the final little takeaway is around organisation, and we've reintroduced the paper diary to middle schools in our middle school in 2020. Certainly backed by popular demand, because we recognise the need need for us to be developing those organisational and management skills, and we'll be laying out over the next couple of weeks our clear expectations about how that diary is used, how it is that the boys are organising their time, both planning ahead and on a day-to-day basis being able to record what some of those learning intentions might have been in the classroom, or what homework they need to achieve for the next day or for the next lesson. As parents, you can play a massive role in helping your son engage with that diary. As I said right at the top of the podcast, one of the impairments of having a prefrontal cortex that they can't fully access comes back to organisation and management. And as adults, teachers and parents, we've really got to support them and help them through with their organisation and get those really great habits working. So that's another great topic that you can be discussing with your sons on the home front. Thank you for tuning in. If you stuck with me for the podcast, I really appreciate it. A bit longer one tonight. We're going to try and get next week's podcast live from our year 7 and 8 camps, and maybe get a little bit of the student voice recorded in there as well. So I hope you can tune in next week. But overall, I just want to thank the parents for showing their support over the last couple of nights, both those who were here and those who couldn't make it, and for the great way in which the boys have returned to the year, refreshed and really excited about starting back. And we've seen that in some really enthusiastic classrooms, and the boys really engaging with the learning, the early learning, and building those relationships with their teachers. So it's there's plenty to do, but it's been a really great start to 2020. Thank you for tuning in, and I hope that you're tuning in again next week. Bye for now.